This evening's reading is in two sections, Ephesians 5, verses 15 to 21, and then Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 9. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. Speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Sing and make music in your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then from chapter 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honour your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favour when their eye is on you, but like slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven. And there is no favouritism with him.
And turn to Ephesians chapter 6 with me, please. Well, we're all motivated to do stuff, aren't we? I know it depends on what we're doing. Maybe for you, money is a motivator. That's a pretty big one in society today, isn't it? It does motivate a lot of people. Maybe you're motivated by love to do some things. Maybe you're motivated by happiness. Maybe you're motivated by friendship, loyalty. Or you're motivated to win someone else's trust in you. Well, as we come to Ephesians this evening, we'll see in these first nine verses of chapter 6 that God, through Paul, speaks to the Christian in the context of their family and the context of their work. But as we look at these verses, we'll see, hopefully we'll see anyway, what's to be the Christian's motivation to live the Christian life in those two contexts, their family and at work. Or to put it this way, what must drive, what must energize the Christian to live the Christian life? Specifically in these two contexts, as I've just said, family and work. And as we come to these first nine verses of chapter 6, we need to just remember the slightly wider context that these verses come in, that Irene very helpfully read for us. Let's just quickly remind ourselves of that wider context, because we're now in the final part of this practical instruction that Paul's been writing about for living the Christian life to the Christians at Ephesus. That final part of practical instruction comes under Paul's final heading, if I can put it like that, in verse 15 of chapter 5. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. And as we saw when we looked at those verses, part of living wisely in the world is verse 18. Don't get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit, be filled with the Holy Spirit. And Paul further unpacks what that he means by that in verses 19 to 21. And in those verses, what's key for setting this context of the first nine verses of chapter 6 is chapter 5, verse 21, where Paul writes, "Submit to one another." We saw last week what submitting to one another looks like in the context of marriage. And this week, God through Paul unpacks what being filled by the Holy Spirit looks like through submitting to one another in my family, and in my workplace. That's the key question for us, what we're going to be looking at this evening. It's up on the screen. What does submitting look like for the Christian in their family and at work? And in that sense, I suppose this evening really is a sermon of two halves. But also, as I've said, what's the motivation for the Christian to do it? To submit in these two different contexts? I'd like you to kind of have that in the background of your mind as well as we come to these verses. And if you're thinking, well, I'm in neither of those contexts, family or work at the moment, well, please stay with the rest of us as we go through these verses, because there is some helpful stuff in there for you as well. So firstly, what does Paul say about the Christians submitting in their family? Let's look at that half of the question first. Well, God through Paul says, children, obey your parents. Go to the next slide, please, Mark. Verse 1 of chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now, just very quickly, parents, maybe you're with me on this one. Are you kind of doing little cartwheels inside? Have you give Paul a bit of a mental high five at this point for saying this? It's great verses, aren't they? And children, well, I won't ask you. You might shoot me with your Nerf guns. But it's pretty clear, isn't it? If you're a child and a Christian living at home, God through Paul says, obey your parents. And as we come to this section, there is a change of language from Paul that's worth noting, because he's moved from submit to obey. We saw last week that submit is that willing and voluntary action out of love for the other person to serve them. That deliberate choice that you and I make to put the other person first. But here for Christian children, and actually for Christians at work, Paul says obey. It is a stronger word than submit, because through it he does indicate that there are some people who have authority over us. But having said that, there may be times when it's right to not do what your parents have asked you to do, because they've asked you to do something that goes directly against Jesus' teaching. This is a tricky area. Please, if I don't cover every kind of angle, just come and ask me. I'm sure Spencer would be happy to chat to you afterwards as well. But let me just say this for the moment, that if you do have friends who haven't got Christian parents, if those non-Christian parents of your Christian friend are told to go directly against Jesus and what he teaches, then it's not right for your friend to obey their parents in that instance. But children, it's so hard, isn't it, when your parents tell you what to do? Maybe like me, you sometimes just have that instant feeling inside that feeds a decision that you make to not do what you've been asked to do by that parent in authority over you. There is a deliberate and willful defiance. It's quite simple. You've been asked to do this or that, whatever it is, and you don't want to do it. Because, well, now's not really a convenient time for you. And that may be true to a point, or not true at all. And anyway, you've just decided maybe to do your homework, and it just so happens that your mum and dad have asked you at the exact same time of you starting to do your homework that it's really not convenient for whatever reason. Or maybe, I suffered from this, still do it a little bit, you suffer from SHS. This is a serious condition. Parents, no, it's not really, tongue's totally in my cheek. Ladies, you'd probably say that it affects the male DNA more so than the female DNA, and I'm sure that may be true to a point. SHS is selective hearing syndrome. I'm sure you know, if you haven't suffered from it before, it's that kind of condition that prevents you from hearing certain things. You pretend, really, what you're doing is you pretend that you didn't hear what mum and dad have just said to you or what they've just asked of you. The only medication for this syndrome, in my book, please take this or leave this, is a good old clip round the ear. But children, did you notice the motivation in verse 1 for you to obey your parents? Why should you do it? Because your motivation is Jesus. In the Lord is what Paul says in verse 1. He says, as it was for wives in submitting to their husbands last week, so for children this week, as part of following Jesus, Jesus calls you to obey your parents. They are in a position of authority over you. Paul continues, verse 2, honour your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. Children, honour your father and mother. Honour means to have respect for. Children, will you respect your parents? Because that will help you to obey them. And again, what's the motivation for you to show your parents respect? Verse 3, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. What's the motivation here, children? Verse 3, it's obeying your parents is actually for your good. Now, you might be thinking, really? Really for my good? How is washing up after tea for my good? The only thing that homework gives me is a headache, which isn't for my good. And we need to bring in what else God, through Paul, says about the Christian submitting to one another in the family context. And Paul turns to fathers and he says, fathers, teach your children about Jesus. Can we have the next slide, please, Mark? Thank you. Verse 4, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, if you're a child here this evening and thinking about obeying being for my good, just stick with me. Hold on to that thought, because I'll come back to it in just a moment. We need to look at this verse first, which says, fathers, don't exasperate your children. That is, fathers, don't seek to make them angry. Don't deliberately annoy them. Don't go out of your way to irritate them. Because doing those kinds of things is simply an abuse of the authority you have over your children. John Stott helpfully wrote this about this verse. He said, what we do know is that parents can easily misuse their authority, either by making irritating or unreasonable demands, which make no allowances for inexperience and immaturity of children. I think that's so helpful. Because as parents, fathers particularly, we need to be aware of our kids' strengths and weaknesses. We need to ask questions like, what can they cope with? What can't they cope with? Will they understand me or not? How can I phrase what I'm asking of them better so they do understand? Will they be able to do what I've asked of them? Is it fair of me to ask them to do what I'm about to ask them to do? Fathers, we can misuse, even abuse, the authority we have by being unreasonable of what we ask of our children. We've got to know our children. But John Stott goes on, pushes it a little bit further in continuing to speak of misusing our authority as parents. He writes this, parents can easily misuse their authority by harshness and cruelty at one extreme, or by favoritism and overindulgence at the other, or by humiliating or suppressing them, or by those two vindictive weapons, sarcasm and ridicule. And again, that's helpful. We must remember that our children are a gift from God. Psalm 127 by Solomon says this in verse 3. Let me just read that verse for us. Psalm 127, verse 3. Solomon writes this, sons and daughters are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. They're not to be the butt of our jokes. They're not to be compared against each other. They've been made by God with gifts and skills different to their brothers and sisters, if they have brothers and sisters. And those gifts and skills are to be respected and loved and encouraged so that they develop and grow. And we're to give them space and time and encouragement to help them grow. Children are a gift from God. They're not an inconvenience. Fathers, we mustn't misuse our authority or abuse it. Instead, we're to teach our children about Jesus. And in teaching them about Jesus, we're to do two things here in verse 4. God, through Paul, says, bring them up. Let me just quickly interject here and say that teaching our children about Jesus starts right from when they're born. It is that idea of bringing up, starting from a very early age. It's literally from a young age through the baby years into being toddlers and then children through to teenagers and then young adults. Bring them up in Jesus' teaching. So let me say, if you've got young children, start teaching them now about Jesus. There really are some great resources and books that are out there that's not that expensive to help you do that. But the two ideas in verse 4 are there to roughly in the middle towards the end. Sorry, should I say, training and instruction. And the idea is both sides of the same coin. So on the one hand, there's positive training. We're to encourage our children to live in this way, to do this or to do that. This is what Jesus teaches. And so let's ask, what does that mean for us to do it? And let's live like that and do what Jesus wants us to do. And on the other hand, there's the negative through instruction. So don't do this or don't do that. This is what Jesus teaches about this, whatever this is, perhaps friendships, using our money, using our time, not being lazy or selfish. And so how can we bring living for Jesus in line with what he's teaching us here? What do we need to stop doing? Because it goes against Jesus' teaching. Or that wouldn't be helpful if we did that. Let's try and see Jesus' wisdom in what he's teaching us here. What is the right way to go? There's a both. This is the way to go, and that isn't the way to go in bringing up our children, as Paul recommends here. Training and instruction of the Lord. Perhaps Moses' sermon has the best possible advice for us in this. Moses said this to God's people. It's a few verses from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And let me just read those, but I'll give you the reference again. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 to 9. Moses said this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. You might not want to do this bit today, but he goes on. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Isn't Moses saying, you know, parents, use every opportunity to talk to your children about God, about who he is, about what he's done in providing salvation for us. Make your conversations about God. Surround yourself with reminders about his teaching. Talk to your children about him. Remind them of him. Teach them about him. And so fathers particularly. Have you got time, maybe on the way to school or to the after school club, whatever it is that they're involved in, to encourage conversation about Jesus? Are you there when the rest of the family sits down for tea? Of course there's exceptions. That may not always be possible, but is it the normal? Do you know what your children are struggling with at school, with friends, with schoolwork, with life? What can you encourage them in about Jesus? Do you read the Bible with them? Do you pray with your children? I read once that Jonathan Edwards, a pastor of a church in America in the 18th century, said this, that the family is to be like a little church. Family is to be like a little church. I think that's a really helpful picture to hold on to. Now, children, hopefully you're still thinking about how obeying my parents is for my good. I said I'd come back to it. Here we go. Part of the answer to that hopefully comes out of what we've just looked at in verse 4. Because when you're loved and valued and treated as a gift from God, when you're being encouraged to grow and develop with the skills and gifts you've been given by God, when you're being built up in Jesus, then obeying someone you respect who has God-given authority over you, well, it should be relatively easier to do than if you're not treated in any of those ways. But also, I want to encourage you to shift your focus just ever so slightly. Because the bit about being for your good isn't necessarily in the act of doing what you've been asked to do or not do. Sometimes it absolutely is for your good. What do I mean? I mean this. I mean that washing up, parents, bear with me. I mean that washing up isn't necessarily for your good. I suppose it helps develop hand-eye coordination or maybe something like that. But that's missing the point. And before you get carried away with quoting me to your parents about the preacher saying, washing up isn't my good, so I really shouldn't do it, please listen carefully, children. The for your good bit is in the act of obeying. That is for your good. So if you are asked to wash up, then it will be good for you to do. Because of the obedience with which you're doing it. I started with these verses from Hebrews. The author to the Hebrews wrote these words about Jesus. Let me just read particularly Hebrews chapter 5, verses 8 to 10 again for us. Hebrews chapter 5, verses 8 to 10. Although he was a son, Jesus, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him, and was designated by God to be high priest in the order of Melchizedek. See, obedience was something that Jesus learned through his sufferings. Obedience is something you, as well as I, and all of us, need to learn. Children, obeying your parents is helping you to learn obedience. If you can learn obedience to your parents, you'll learn obedience to Jesus. And as the author of Hebrews says, those who obey Jesus receive the salvation that he provides for us. Children, obey your parents. Be motivated by Jesus. Fathers, will you teach your children about Jesus? Well, secondly, let's look at the second half of the question that we started with. What does submitting look like for the Christian at work? God says through Paul, work as though working for Jesus. Can we have the next slide, please, Mark? I'm taking that from verse 7. Just have a look at chapter 6, verse 7 with me. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men. And let me say that even though Paul talks about slaves and masters in these verses, the equivalent for us today is that of employees and of employers. But I also want to suggest that employers doesn't just mean those who've got their own company. Employers could also mean you if you're in a position of management at your workplace. And I say that because I think the principle is the same. The principle being that you too have people under you. You have people who you're responsible for. And who do what you tell them to do. Well, that's the ideal anyway, isn't it? Well, we need to ask Paul this question. Well, what does it look like for me to work in my place of work as though I'm working for Jesus? Well, Paul basically says to employees, chapter 6, verse 5, obey your earthly masters. Obey your employers. Obey those in a position of management over you, because they are in a position of authority. Now, let me say again quickly, it's not a blanket teaching from Paul. Of course, if you're asked to do something in your job that goes against what Jesus teaches, well, put Jesus first. It would be right for you to disobey in that situation. But we need to ask a further question of Paul. What does it look like for me to obey at work? Well, Paul answers that question by teaching us four characteristics. Four characteristics that both employees and employers should have. Because Paul says of employers and those in positions of management, just have a look at verse 9 with me, and masters, treat your slaves in the same way. These four characteristics are what both employees and employers need to take on board. So what are these four characteristics that we need to put into practice as we obey at work? Well, firstly, be respectful. Verse 5, chapter 6, slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear. See, as for children to parents, so the same principle applies to employees and employers. Show respect. If nothing else, it will make obeying easier. And that can be hard, because you're not always going to agree with your employer or your manager. If you're a manager, you're not always going to agree with those people that you manage. I do think it helps to remember that if you are an employee, those in authority over you at work do have different pressures to you. Some of those pressures you may know about and understand. Other pressures you won't necessarily know about, and so naturally won't understand. But that pressure that's on your manager or your employer is feeding into why you're being asked to do something that you may not totally agree with. You see, the flip side is also true, isn't it? If you're a manager, you'll have those different pressures from above. I mean, let's face it, everybody's got a boss, haven't they? It's not always helpful to let those pressures you're under purely drive the way you treat those under you. So maybe you need to explain why you're asking that person to do something. And so for employees, maybe you could ask and find out why you're being asked to do this or that. Either way, the first characteristic that Paul gives us is to show respect. Secondly, be honest. Paul puts it like this in verse 5. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with sincerity of heart, honesty, just as you would obey Christ. And I've got to say that this characteristic is just so refreshing. When I was working as a site manager before going to Oak Hill College, if people who'd worked on my site, my build manager, those I worked with, my colleagues, just took even an ounce of this characteristic, it would have made life so much easier. Be honest. Tell the truth to your employer or manager or those you manage. Say you made a mistake. You got something wrong. You simply forgot. Or you misunderstood. You thought that they meant this or that, which is why you did it like that. Or say if you don't quite agree with something, if you're asked for your opinion. But be ready to explain why you don't agree. But be honest and say, well, but then you've got to be prepared to perhaps be wrong. Or even be prepared for your idea to not be the idea that people go with. Speak the truth, however embarrassing. Yes, it's going to be humbling at times, but be honest. It saves a lot of hassle and grief down the line. It also shows that you can be trusted. See, when you're being honest and you're speaking the truth, your employer or manager will respect that as well. They will see you as someone who can be trusted. Have that characteristic of honesty at work. Thirdly, Paul says, be conscientious. Verse 6, obey them not only to win their favour when their eye is on you, but like slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. And it's so easy, isn't it, to make that extra effort when you're being watched. Just to take a little bit more time over what you're doing, because you know the boss is watching you do it. To be that little bit more careful, to show that little bit more concern. But you're to, as I am, to have that characteristic that does everything in the same way, whether the boss is watching or not. It's so tempting sometimes just to cut a few corners. After all, no one's going to really notice. This doesn't really matter that much. But we're to be bothered that what we do is done properly. We're to take care in all of our work. It doesn't matter how important or not the task is that we're doing. We're to do everything with care and concern and seek to do it right. This characteristic, it just follows on naturally from being honest, because if we're one thing in front of the boss and we're something else when he or she is not around, well, then we're not really being honest either. Be conscientious at work. Fourthly, be committed, as Paul says in verse 7, serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men. Now, please don't misunderstand me here. I'm not suggesting that once you've got a job, you need to stick with it for the rest of your life. Of course, there's a time when it's right and appropriate for you to leave your place of work and join another company, for example, or even change job options. Paul's getting at that characteristic that shows we're hardworking. We're committed to the work we're doing. We're not lazy. We're not indifferent. You know, the characteristic that just says, you know, yeah, whatever, not really bothered. We're to show commitment. It ties in with being conscientious. We're to do what we've been given to do and do it well. In fact, we're to do what we've been given to do and do it to the best that we can do it. Putting in our energy and our skills and our effort. Wanting it to be right. Wanting it to be done to a good standard. See, I'm not saying work all hours. I'm not saying show your commitment by becoming a workaholic. That's the extreme at the other end of the spectrum, opposite laziness. But all through these verses 1 to 9, Paul keeps saying roughly the same phrase, along the lines of, in the Lord, of Christ, the Lord. Because we're all motivated by all sorts of things, aren't we? As I started, we can be motivated by all sorts of different things, and for lots of different reasons. Some of those reasons can be good reasons. Some can be bad reasons. Most reasons, usually a mixture of both, because of our sinful hearts. We can be any of these four characteristics for purely our own advantage. Maybe to be noticed. Maybe to climb that career ladder for the prestige of the job title and the wage packet to match it. Maybe to stand out and be noticed and get that attention that we feel we need from those that we work with. To win favours from the boss or just to be known as a good worker because, well, we take a sense of pride in that reputation. But Paul wants the Christian in the family and at work to be motivated by Jesus. Jesus is what must drive us. If we're Christian this evening, he's the one that must energise us to do these things, to live life in this way. We're to look only to him for our motivation. And we're to do that because of the reward, as Paul says, the reward of heaven that's possible because of Jesus. Verse 8. Let me start from verse 7. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is a slave or free. Please note the end of that verse. Whatever good he or she does, whether slave or free. So whether you have children at home or not, whether you work or not at the moment, whatever you do, do it all directly for Jesus. This verse helps us to see actually that these four characteristics of being respectful, being honest, being conscientious, being committed aren't just for those who work. They're for all Christians, for all areas of life. Whatever we do, whatever our circumstances, we're to do it all directly for Jesus. Because only in him do we receive an eternal inheritance that can never spoil, never perish, never fade away. Only in Jesus, as we thought about last week, will we be presented to him with all holiness that he gives to us. Only in Jesus are we God's treasured possession. Well, finally, Paul gives employers and managers one final bit of teaching, which is this. He says, remember your master in heaven. Go to the next slide, please, Mark. Verse 9. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. Why are Christian employers and those in management to remember their master in heaven? Or rather, what is it that they're to remember about their master in heaven? Well, they're to remember that God doesn't have favourites. And that's true as a general Christian characteristic. We thought about that this morning, didn't we? If you weren't here this morning, I'd encourage you to go online and listen to that. We're not to show favouritism. But hearing what Paul's saying, the context is more that you're to remember, if you're an employer or in a position of management, that you also have a master, and that's God. And in remembering that, you need to remember that he's a God who doesn't have favourites. So don't fall into the trap of thinking that you're more important than anyone else in God's eyes, because you're not. The danger, as Paul says, is that you abuse or misuse your position of authority. He says in verse 9 here, do not threaten. Don't be harsh with those you're responsible for. Don't be aggressive because you have some authority over those who work for you or with those who are under your authority at work. Don't derive a sense of worth in your authority that could make you feel more important than you actually are. You see, in your company's eyes, because of the position you've got, you may be important. Because of the position you've got to some of your colleagues, you may be important. But don't find your own sense of worth and value in your position of authority. Remember that God loves you, that his son went to the cross just as much for you as he did for those who work for you who are under your authority. Remember that his grace was freely given to you just as much as you freely received it. So too is his grace for others. Remember your master in heaven, because he doesn't have favourites. Children, will you obey your parents? Fathers, will you teach your children about Jesus? Christians, will you work as though working for Jesus? In fact, whatever you do, will you do it all directly for Jesus? Because with him, there is great reward, which is eternity with him.